Talk WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. This one's going to be a juicy one as I head out on my Maryland crab cake tour, eating crab cakes all over the state. You never know who might have some local connections around here. Don Moeller is with us. Of course, he's Catonsville, and I'm Dundalk, and we do this together. I want to give a thanks to all of our sponsors, including our friends at Fadley's and at State Fair, where 4th of July, the chairs are out. Everybody's going to have a good time, drink a lot of beer. It's going to be awesome. Don, I hit you sort of in the way that you don't like to be hit with this show, which is we're having a guest on. You don't know who the guest is. We're having him tomorrow. Let's go, which is completely against, like, your religion, isn't it?
Well, you know that it's going to make me stay up all night long and research and find everything that I can, because unlike you, I cannot come on here and wing it. I'm not a winger, as they say.
I've done live radio for 30 years. Ish happens, Don. You know, I mean, you know, so here's the deal. Noel Castler is a guy that I found on the internet 3-4 years ago through lots and lots of different people. If you are familiar with his work, he is performing at Ram's Head, where I saw the great Rick Nielsen of Cheap Trick just 48 hours ago. So it's very, very fresh. When I saw his name pop up on the roster at Ram's Head down in Annapolis, I said, man, I really want to get him on. So I hit Laura down there, and then I hit him on Twitter. He hit me back, and boom, he's here. No, I would have loved to have had you on during the previous guy's administration, but now that you're making a buck and I found out you have some local connections here, it is absolutely a pleasure to have you on. Comedian Noel Castler, formerly of the Celebrity Apprentice. Am I allowed to say that legally? And you didn't sign it.
Yeah, anything. Sure. I signed a lot of things, but you can say it all you want. He's done.
So here's the fun part of this. I'm very familiar with your work. Maybe people in the audience, you know, are. Don was not. So this makes even a more interesting conversation, because when I bring you up, your, it's all like not fresh to me, but it was in the beginning, like, who is this cat? And so when people ask you, like on a radio show to an audience that doesn't know, who are you and how did you become sort of internet famous during the Trump administration?
Well, that's a great question, Nestor. I'm somebody who worked in live television and the music business for 25 years. Matter of fact, last time I was at Ram's Head was with Stephen Stills about 10 years ago on a solo tour. So I road managed Crosby, Stills, and Nash and people like the Rolling Stones and Bruce Springsteen. And I worked in live television. So I worked on the Grammys and the VMAs and the Super Bowl halftime show for 15
years. When you say work on that, I've had a backstage pass through life. So I see people, you know, grippers, handlers, right, camera people with scripts, people with little earpieces talking.
I'm the earpiece guy, Nestor. I handled talent. My job was to coordinate all the movements of the talent behind the scene in live television, right? So when it's live, you have stage managers on the side of the stage and you have to deliver the talent at the exact time to go on. So if you're Madonna doing the halftime show or Prince, both of those I worked on, you gotta be on time. And it's the same way in, you know, all these televised TV shows. So I got a gig. It's basically a small crew that does it. I started my career down in DC on the Kennedy Center Honors, you may be familiar with, big, you know, show that comes on every year. So I was
kind of— Were you there the night that Sam Wilson made Robert Plant cry?
Yes, I was. And a matter of fact, I'm looking at Nancy Wilson's Telecaster right now that I got, because we had the same guitar tech for Crosby, Stills, and Nash that Hart, and he built a guitar for her and I bought it from him. But that's an aside. And last time I saw Ann was in Neil Young's house. He had a big barbecue before the Bridge School benefit and I hung out with Ann Wilson. But I'm digressing, Nestor, as I tend to do. So cut me off.
No, you're going to fit right in here.
You're okay. On the format.
Because we digress.
You must be from around here.
Our favorite right. line is there is no straight line on Baltimore.
Well, thank you, Doc.
So have a ball.
Thank you. And my grandparents live in Catonsville. My grandfather passed, but my grandma's still in Catonsville. So I have deep roots in that area. Bill's Music was a store I used to hang out in as a kid and everything.
We broadcast right across the street. That's where State Fair. Do you remember the Friendlies across the street?
Yeah. Yeah,
State Fair now. That's like the center of our universe. So yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
You will be having chicken and waffles there at some point on or around October, whenever your show is.
Exactly. September 16th, but who's counting? So anyway, I worked behind the scenes and I worked kind of at an A-list level. Now, the Celebrity Apprentice finales came up. A colleague of mine got the assignment. It was, certainly wasn't A-list, but it was a lark. You know, I live in New York City. That's where I've been, you know, last 25 years. And she said, hey, we're shooting a live finale at Rockefeller Center. I kind of need an A-list team to handle the talent behind the scenes. It's a pretty decent paycheck. It's like one day's work. We'll go to the after party. You know, it'll be a blast. So that's why I said, sure, I'll do it. You know, I wanted to see if like Omarosa was a real person because I'd watched the show, you know, and I'm like, and I knew Trump. I went to high school up here and stuff. And, you know, he was always a cartoon character and nobody ever thought he was going to become president. And then I get the gig and we shot the first season in 8H at SNL Studios. If your listeners, you know, ever watched Saturday Night Live, that's where the first fake boardroom was, like where you see the host come out. You know, we had the fake boardroom. And I was assigned to Ivanka and Jared and saw firsthand sort of how out of his mind Trump was, you know, and, you know, he.
See, I'm not familiar with the show. Like, was she a part of the show? And Jared, were they weaved into, because I knew who she was from sort of the, you know, I mean, the family. But like Donald Trump was a guy that would just come on Howard Stern and just talk shit. I mean, literally, like nobody would take it seriously. Like, it's one of the astonishing events of my lifetime, what we have witnessed in the last 6 years.
One of the interesting, and I've told this before, our listeners will have heard this, but it ties right into your story, and it's a fascinating story. My former boss, who passed away far too soon from a heart attack, he was a Democratic Baltimore County executive, and we would have, I used to kid that our office extended was a little diner on York Road called the Towson Diner. And we literally would be in there 3 days a week with meetings. And I can remember like it was yesterday in the middle of that Republican primary back beginning in 2015 and up through 16. And I said to him one morning, I said, you know, this is hard to believe. Donald Trump is going to be the Republican nominee for president. And I was his chief of staff at the time. And he looked at me and we always went back and forth. They said, you have really lost your mind. And he said, you know, you've lost all political sense you once had. And I said, boss, I'm just telling you, they're not coming together. The other 15 candidates aren't smart enough to go in a room and say, guys, if we don't do something soon here and pick one of us to go head to head, this guy's going to win with 25-30%. Well, the rest, as they say, is history. So none of it made sense.
And where were you on this trail, Noel? Like, you know, so Apprentice is 13, 12. Like, give me a timeline on the arc of from the minute you met him to the minute I met you talking about his incontinence issues and drug
addicts. Right on. And by the way, really astute point, Don. That's exactly what happened. They weren't prepared for a WrestleMania president, or candidate. He came out and insulted all the other guys, and there'd always been a bit of decorum that he just flaunted because pushed aside. That's who he is. Nestor started at the Celebrity Apprentice level. So he had a TV show on NBC for 12 years. NBC was one of my big clients. So as I said, I would do a lot of their shows. I didn't do it when it was just The Apprentice, which was like, it was a game show for sort of non-famous people to compete for a job at the Trump Organization. Then they brought in all these celebrities. And because that's my background handling talent, you know, they started bringing in Cyndi Lauper and, you know, Joan Rivers and all these people. That's when I came
in. Brett Michaels was on the show, right?
Dude, I could tell you a story about that year because he chose Brett Michaels, okay? And he chose him over Holly Robinson Pete, who was clearly the most qualified candidate. She was brilliant. She won every sort of business contest they had. Brett never even showed up. And I'll tell you a backstory. I worked on the Tony Awards for 20 years too. And the year before I was assigned to Poison, right? And Poison performed at the Tonys and Brett didn't come to rehearsal, so he didn't learn the blocking. And we're shooting at Radio City Music Hall. It's a live show. He's performing. I'm stage right, getting ready to catch the band when they come off. And all of a sudden, Brett Michaels starts walking downstage, meaning towards the audience and waving, right? And everybody gasps because a huge scrim is coming down, a big steel scrim. It came down on his head, Nestor, and almost took his head off. We had to bring him off the stage on a stretcher. This happened in live TV. Right? Fast forward 8 months later, he's a contestant on Celebrity Apprentice. He was in such bad shape, he never came to any of the, you know, rehearsals or contests. Once again, we had EMTs on the side of the stage unless he had it, in case he had a stroke during the live taping. Like, that's how much bad shape he was in from not listening, you know, a year earlier, from basically not doing his job. My point being, that's not the guy you hire to represent your corporation, right? You know, but so when we told Donald Trump, hey, Brett, you know, I know you like Brett, but you got to hire Holly. She won every contest there was. And Don said, they want me to pick the N-word. He said it two times, and he said it in front of earshot of Holly Robinson Pete. They want me to pick the N-word, and stormed off set, and he picked Brett Michaels. That's just who he was. He would say the N-word out loud. He was like, he's like an old guy from the 50s or something. You know what I mean? You thought he had Tourette's, how much he would like say things in public that you would never expect somebody to say.
No, I want to pick up on that point, because it comes through. I've now focused in on your Twitter feed. I've read a lot of stuff online in terms of your writing and your observations. This topic, and it's an interesting topic, because I think there are those that will suggest that nobody can corroborate not only what you've said, but Mary Trump, Michael Cohen, others, about how deep-seated, I call him Cap. We don't even refer to him by his name. You know, it's Celebrity Apprentice President, the Cap. How deep-seated his racism is, and how much a part of it is what drives him. And I think embedded in that are two questions, really. My gut says I want to believe it because of what I think about the Cap. But at the same time, the fairness in me says, are these folks who just have an axe to grind? Is Noel just a guy? Is he just another disgruntled ex-Trumper who says, I'm going to show that SOB? What? I'm sure you've heard that over and over. So address his racism and then the charge that maybe you're just a guy with an axe to grind.
Absolutely. And that's a fair point. First of all, I'm not selling anything, you know, unlike Michael Cohen. Like, now I have a gig coming up, but I'm a comedian, you know, but I didn't sell a book. I didn't sell a podcast. I didn't do this for money. I could care less. I said it on a comedy stage. So I want people to take it, or, you know, you don't have to believe me. You don't have to believe Mary Trump, right? You don't have to believe Michael Cohen. You should believe your own eyes. Look at what he did as a president. Look what his policies are. How are you going to tell me the guy's not racist, you know? And people on that show said he, not just Holly Robinson Pete, Kwame Jackson, who was a black contestant who won the first contest. He was an African-American guy, and Trump did the same thing. He goes, I'm not picking the N-word. You know, he got mad. So I get that criticism. You know, again, like, people didn't speak out. He had a big NDA. Like, I signed a 24-page NDA. Mark Burnett said in my industry, because a lot of people were speaking out in 2016, I told Hillary's campaign, because he abused drugs. He snorted Adderall. Like, he was out of his mind. And I don't care if you do that stuff and you can do the job, but if you're legitimately, yeah, you know, I toured with Crosby, Stills, and Nash. You know, like, I'm used to people doing drugs. If you can do the gig, no problem. But if you're in active addiction, meaning you're consumed with resentment and self-centered fear and anxiety, which Trump is. That's why he's tweeting at 2 a.m. about his enemies and stuff. That's the last guy you want as a president. That's the last guy you want leading this country. And that's what I was trying to warn people about. I don't care if you believe me, use your own judgment. But what I'm trying to tell you is this is what's going on with this guy psychologically. And look what happened, you know. Mark Burnett threatened to sue everybody, as I said, in 2016. So my industry didn't speak out. The directors, there's people who saw worse stuff than I did. Sexual assaults, all kinds of crazy, crazy stuff that if he wasn't a rich white guy, you know, who had his name on the side of the buildings, he would have been in trouble for a long time ago, right? So my colleagues didn't want to speak out because they wanted to work again. It's hard to get a job in the entertainment business. I walked away from my career behind the scenes. That's why I went into comedy. I was like, I don't care if I never make another dime. I got to tell my truth. Because I told the people that I work with, I said, look, there's nothing on the other side of this. We know what a maniac this guy is and how bad he'll screw up his president. And sadly, that's exactly what happened. My industry shut down. There was no television in the last year. There was no concerts. There was nothing because he pretended like a pandemic didn't exist because he thought it would hurt his chances at reelection. So he ignored it instead of like, you know, if we got on the ball in February of last year, we might not have had 600,000 people die and lose a year of American life, you know?
No. If ever I write a book, one of the chapters is what you just alluded to, and I'll try to make it short. It would have been awful for the country in some ways, but it would have been the best thing for the country. I've said to my wife and others repeatedly, had this guy, and you're really talking about his personality traits that would not let him do this, said back in December or January, had he been able, even if it went against everything he believed, to come out to that microphone and say, folks, we're looking down something that is horrific. As the president, I'm going to do everything I can to support these scientists, but I'm going to step aside. And as a nation, we always come together and we're going to take our lead from them. Not only would at least 100,000 people have not died, the bad part for the is he would have been reelected in a landslide. He wasn't even able, in a Machiavellian way, to say, even though it goes against everything I believe in, because it's always got to be about me, he wasn't even able to do that, knowing, right, that he would have won in a landslide, because America comes together in a time of crisis. He squandered that
opportunity. I'm shocked he didn't vilify the Chinese and make it about that to rally the flag in some way.
Yeah, he did to some extent. I mean, he called it the Wuhan, whatever.
China. I mean, really, 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 you know, bear down on it.
You're right. Well, he does a lot of business with the Chinese. You know, he pretends like he's mad at him. A whole floor in Trump Tower he's rented to the Chinese bank, the largest bank in China since 2008. He takes in $2 million a year in income from the Chinese. So you got to understand, with Donald Trump, it's always about how can he make a buck. Right. So, there was no money in being smart about the pandemic. Like Don said, if we did like the leaders did in New Zealand, you know, and we said, hey, this is going to be the challenge of our lifetime, folks, but we're going to hunker down in our homes. I'm going to send out checks to everybody. Right. We're going to make sure everybody gets fed and we're going to get through this and nip it in the bud. Instead, he was having rallies this time a year ago. You know, he was pretending, I'm not wearing a mask. You can wear one, but I'm not going to wear one. It was insanity. And look where we are now. We got half the country that's not even getting vaccinated. You know, he turned science into a political issue, and that's unforgivable.
Only 31% of the people in Alabama are vaccinated. They're 50th in the nation. That's directly related to the narrative that he spun. And it continues
to be Tommy Tuberville to Washington.
Destructive. Continues to be destructive. But Noel, you mentioned another character in this morality play. And I'm not sure everyone out there, not everybody out there reads People magazine or Twitter or follows pop culture. And they may have heard the name Mark Burnett, but he really is one of the villains in this morality play. Tell us and our listeners who this guy Mark Burnett is and why he comes front and center as a villain.
Okay, well, he's definitely a villain. I mean, he created the modern image of Donald Trump that most of the rest of America knew about, right? Like in New York, we knew he was a con man. We knew he'd been bankrupt. He was kind of a joke. He was a joke. Nobody took him seriously. He wasn't a part of society. He wasn't a real billionaire. to answer your earlier question, Nestor. That's why he had his kids on the show, because he wanted the paycheck for them. If you're a real billionaire, your kids are off riding horses, you know, and sailing on catamarans. They're not working on a game.
I've met a few of those, right? Yeah, right. I mean, yeah, exactly. I've been involved around the NFL. There's some who are in, and there's some strumming a guitar somewhere else.
Exactly. Right. Your dad's a billionaire. You're not showing up, you know, like on The Apprentice to make a buck. But he needed the cash because he'd already blown his inheritance from his father. And that was after six bankruptcies. Right. So he needed an image rehab. Mark Burnett is a huge reality television producer. Your viewers may know Survivor, Shark Tank, The Voice. These are all huge properties. They're all Mark Burnett properties, right? So originally he went to Vladimir Putin and he wanted to do a show on the Mir space station, right? And follow around some oligarchs and the people that were funding this. And
no, you should have been on a show last week when I took NBC out back behind the woodshed for sanctioning that ish,
right?
With Putin. Yeah. I mean, literally, like...
Well, you were right to do that, Nestor, because literally it was Putin... I mean, it was, yeah, Putin told Mark Burnett, no, what you want to do is a show on this guy, Donald Trump. And that's how The Apprentice came to New York, and he did it on Donald Trump. The idea came from the Russians originally. Like, how insane is that? And then, of course, Trump's whole, like, you know, presidency benefited the Russians, right? He pulls us out of all the treaties. You know, he sided with Putin over American intelligence 2 years ago in Helsinki. You know, over NSA, which is near you guys and Glen Burnie. Like, I believe Vladimir Putin more than our country's intelligence agencies, which you guys be in Maryland. You know the quality of people and how they dedicate their lives to our governmental information. To have an American president, my grandfather was career NSA. He lived in Catonsville, you know, like he would have rolled over in his grave and probably did the day Donald Trump came out and stood next to Vladimir Putin, said he says he didn't interfere in the election. I believe him. Right. So clearly Putin had an asset, and I'm not getting conspiratorial. I'm just saying Trump being a president benefited Putin. Trump having his image rehabilitated on The Apprentice allowed him to become a viable political candidate, because most of America believed it. They thought he was a billionaire. Guess what? He's not a billionaire. Yeah.
I think they thought, and Nestor said he never watched it. Certainly back to the original Apprentice. I think Americans thought that was the actual boardroom in Trump Tower. They didn't think that was on stage on the Saturday Night Live stage. Right. They thought that was the boardroom in Trump Towers, which now you've been there. I've been told the other dirty little secret, which is fascinating, is that the boardroom looked like he wished Trump Towers would look, but that it's truly was pretty run down and dated and not at all representative of what the image he and Burnett were presenting. Is that accurate?
You've done your research, Don. It's 100% accurate. Here's what happened, because my buddy was the audio guy on the original Apprentice. And when they went to film the first show, essentially, they went into Trump Tower and the furniture was so ratty that they had to rent out furniture to make the guy look rich. Because most people don't realize it was a licensing company. Trump Organization was like 12 people and three of them were his kids. You know, he didn't really build buildings. He rented out his name to other companies that would build the buildings and he would launder money through them. The other thing with Trump is he laundered a bunch of oligarchs' money, because after the Soviet Union fell in 89, all these people that were crooked and corrupt in the former Soviet Union needed to get that money out of there and plant it somewhere. In New York City, before Trump, to buy a luxury real estate property, you had to pass what's known as a board, you know, a co-op board. You had to show where your money came from, where you went to college, all these kind of things. Trump built Trump Tower and basically was like, if you got the money, you can buy a condo. So he let anybody into New York and into that high-level real estate. And that's benefiting crime, essentially.
You know? I remember the really corrupt dude that ran U.S. soccer, sort of the fat guy with the bird. I don't remember his name. Legendary. So he's been dead a while. He was all involved in all the Qatari money and, you know, the bags of money and all that. And he's been dead a number of years. But this is before Trump was president. He lives in Trump Tower. Yeah, you know what I mean? And if you've been anywhere near the, you know, the Trump Towers in like Miami or other places, it's like all Russian people. If you just go across the street, it's all Russian. It's like their little Russian towers. It blows me away that 5 years into this week, but he's gone now, right? So like, and you have a comedy career now, but I do want to sort of piece together If you say Catonsville one more time, Mueller's going to have you at his house on the 4th of July.
I mean, he's right, welcome, right, more than welcome. He's probably, I bet he's been to the 4th of July parade if his granddad lived here.
Yeah, and I was down at the Annapolis 4th of July a couple years ago. I saw Larry Hogan jogging by in 100-degree heat.
But wait, give your local thing, because I've been following you a couple years. Right. I'm very familiar with, I mean, on press conferences, you were go to, an accompaniment to how coked up, you know, Trump was on any given night, or the diapers he would wear. Like, it was so, once we started following you, it spoke to me wanting to have you on the program. But the Catonsville thing, let's talk about that, and a little bit of comedy and what you're bringing to the stage in September, because I think Trump's part of the act, but I remember having J.J. Walker on, and he didn't want to be Dynamite anymore. You know, I mean,
at some
point, Sarah Cooper can't be reading the script. She's got to go do her thing. But so many of you had a platform, and, you know, I'm thrilled for you, and, you know, being a local guy with some local roots, I definitely want to help you sell some tickets, as you said on Twitter.
Well, thank you, brother. Yeah, I was born in Chestertown, Maryland, and I grew up in
Washington College.
I'm getting a crab cake there with Heather Mazier.
My parents were students at Washington College, and they had me as 19-year-old sophomores, you know, in 1971. It was a different time, you know. And then I still got a lot of family on the Eastern Shore as well. And I grew up in PG County primarily. I moved up to New York in my high school years.
That's why you left. If you stayed in Baltimore, you never would have gone.
I know. Yeah, now I was in PG, you know, but I went back. I went to the University of Maryland for a bit. I lived in DC a lot as a young man. I started my career, you know, and I still have a ton of family in Maryland, and I love Maryland, you know. So, and when this show came up, this is kicking off my tour, you know, September 16th at the Rams Head. And as I said, I was there 10 years ago on a Stephen Stills tour, and he was mad at Neil Young that night. And he actually started cursing out Neil Young on the stage, who wasn't with us, but he'd canceled a Buffalo Springfield.
So he wasn't singing Love the One You're With, or not?
Yeah, he did Love the One You're With to close, but he basically got really mad. And this is a funny story, I think. And people started YouTube, like taking videos and YouTubing it, like the audience at Rams Head, because he was like cursing out his guitar tech. He was really mad at Neil because Neil had just canceled this bigger tour we were supposed to do with Buffalo Springfield. So we end up, you know, in a club tour, which is great, but, you know, Stills was kind of mad about it. And we finished the gig, and I walk him back to the tour bus, and my cell phone rings. And Stephen and Neil had the same manager. He passed away, a guy named Elliot Roberts, legendary guy, founded Geffen Records, and with Geffen, obviously. But my phone rings, and it's Elliot. He goes, "Noel, I got Neil on the other line. Hand your phone to Stephen." You know, and he, because Stephen didn't realize what YouTube was. This was 10 years ago. He thought he could just say it in the club and it would stay in the club. And people were like, "Oh my God, look, Stephen Stills is yelling at Neil Young," and they were YouTubing it. So it got back to California in 10 minutes. And, you know, stories like that, you know, I worked in the business for 20 years. You know, Trump is a footnote and it's important, and I'll touch on the political stuff, but I got a ton of stories from my time in rock and roll, you know, some great fun stuff. And this tour is about reclaiming what we lost in the Trump era. You know, he divided us. That's the worst thing you can do to a people. You know, the people who support him, they fell for a con. People get conned sometimes, you know. The most important thing about us is that we are one people, and we're only as well off as the least among us, you know. And some people are hurting right now, and some people are getting marginalized, and that isn't right, you know. So my comedy kind of celebrates diversity and wants to bring us all together. You know, one of the things that bugged me most in the Trump era was like how they were demonizing the caravans all the time on Fox News. You know, the caravans are coming, you know, they're coming to take your job. No, they're not. You know, those are men and women looking for a safe place to live and raise their kids and to work their butts off. Like that's
my father did from Venezuela in 1966.
Exactly. Right? I'm like, that's who you want here. You know, that's who you want in America. You know, we got to realize what we are as America. You know, we're not. So I go.
No, you sparked a memory. I use it all the time. During one of the big blizzards here a few years ago, we have a lawn company that takes care of our lawn. And in the case of snow, they come and take care of our snow. And it had to be 2:30 or 3 in the morning. And I looked out, and there were 5 or 6 men of Latin descent, Latinos, on my front patio, on my front walk. Here it is. I mean, 3 o'clock in the morning, ice cold. And I can remember my wife turning over in bed and looking at me, and she goes, "And tell me again, why wouldn't we want this immigration? Why wouldn't we want these folks in our country? I'm missing something." And I thought that was the best example ever. It's what you said. These guys are, I don't think a lot of 15 and 16 year olds in my neighborhood had any interest in being out there at 2:30 or 3 in the morning shoveling.
Well, I'll give my story. My wife and I, when Billy Cundiff missed the kick, we didn't get to go to Europe to see Springsteen. So we went to Canada instead to see Springsteen because it was cheaper. And we drove through the wild Maine blueberry fields. And if you've ever been there, it's stunning. It's beautiful. And we saw these little things that look like dog houses. My cat's litter box is over here. It literally looked like a litter box, but like Snoopy, like a dog house. And they were out in the fields, and we're kind of far enough away that it, Dom, we had Dan Rogers on talking about me staying in a little house out on Savage River to fly fish later on in August on the Crab Cake Tour. They look like little houses, but they look like dog houses. And then I realized, oh, that's where the people that pick the blueberries live. Oh, I bet they're not from Bangor. I bet they're not from Portland. I bet they're not from Bahaba, or they just didn't come in from the Cape. I bet their skin probably looks a little like mine, and their first language was Spanish. And, and every morning I eat a blueberry. Every morning of my life I eat blueberries, and I never lose. So every morning I think about that, and I think about what we've demonized in this country, Noel, and I'm flattered you want to spend time. Don's thrilled that you're from Catonsville. We're happy that you're playing a Ramshead. But more than that, I'm happy you stood up to speak truth to like the nonsense that went on here the last 5 years, because there wasn't enough of it. Certainly not from people on the inside that I began to trust as not being full of shit, you know, because there was a lot of full of shit on the other end.
Yeah. Speaking of that, Nestor, I'm curious. Now, one of the stories, you tweet a lot, you write about a lot, you were the Ivanka whisperer. One of the stories, and I'd be curious if you can debunk this or say, not sure, but it makes some sense. I've had folks that are pretty credible tell me, I think it was Georgetown. Did Ivanka go to Georgetown? I think it was Georgetown. Wherever she
went to Penn. She went to Penn. University of Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. Yep. That she spent one day in the college dorm and called her dad and said, this just isn't going to work for me. And ended up then spending her college years in the Ritz-Carlton or one of the Trump properties. Does that sound Ivanka-like to you?
Yeah, that's Ivanka-esque as it gets. You know, she got kicked out of Chapin, which is a fancy boarding school in Manhattan. She was a party girl. Her dad basically turned her onto the modeling world when she was as young as 10. It's a whole nother episode, but there's some real unseemly stuff there. He hooked her up with John Casablancas, who's a known predator, and she became a model too young. With modeling and hanging out in nightclubs comes drug use and all this stuff. So she got kicked out of Chapin, which is a really fancy girl school, prep school in Manhattan, and they sent her to Choate Rosemary Hall, which is up in Connecticut. You know, more of a traditional boarding school. You're stuck up in the country.
All I think is Holden Caulfield and Pensy Prep.
That's it. You got the right image, brother. That's what it is, right? And like day two there, she was like, oh, this isn't going to work for me.
Right. She wasn't going to erase all the FUs.
Right. They had a car on standby. They had an SUV that would wait in the parking lot so she could take late night runs in to go clubbing. You know, so that's who she is. And she manipulates her father. You know, what I observed, like when I worked with them, for example, she was the only one to get a trailer. Nobody else got a trailer. We ended up filming it at the Museum of Natural History. Speaking of Holden Caulfield, right? The famous steps. We filmed the last three seasons at a theater that's in that museum complex. And in the parking garage underneath, she requested a trailer that was like triple size. And I got mad because she had a 5-person glam squad. So my call time went from like 4 p.m. to like, 12 p.m. to meet like her fifth like makeup person or something. She was an insane diva. And she was running the show behind the scenes. Her and Jared ran the show in the White House.
I want to ask you about that, because you write a lot about, you've given interviews about, you tweet about Ivanka and Jared, and basically, and correct me if I'm wrong, I want to say the theme that comes out of what you write and what you talk about is that Jared and Ivanka are more interested in power than even they are in money, that they're about power. And one of my questions for you is, am I capturing that right? And then if I am, I'm going to ask again, because we have Trump folks that listen, to say to you, what makes you qualified? I think you're right, but I would say to you, what makes you qualified to talk about what Jared and Ivanka really want? People would say, who makes him qualified to make that judgment?
Because I've known them since they started dating, okay? And they broke up originally because Trump used to call Jared the Jew. He's an anti-Semite. So he'd be like, is the Jew here yet? And Jared was like, I don't want any part of this, right? So they broke up. Wendy Dang Murdoch, Putin's ex-girlfriend, and Rupert Murdoch's ex-wife got them back together. Okay. Took Ivanka on a cruise in the Aegean or somewhere, you know, in Europe one summer and said, no, you don't get it. You and Jared are getting back together and you're going to be the power couple. Okay. So I saw the dynamic between them when we did The Apprentice. And Trump, this is what I like to tell people. This is what Trump's interested in. He wants music to play when he walks in the room. He wants to get high and he wants to hit on women. Okay. He's a narcissist. He needs immediate gratification. There's no real long game in Donald Trump. He's got a giant hole inside of him that he needs to fill all the time. That's why his handlers had him out at rallies all the time, because he just needed 20,000 people saying you're so great, because deep down he knows he's not great. He can't read. You know, he was a horrible student. That's why his family hit his grades. Like, he's a deplorable person. Nobody.
He brags, Noel, that he's right. Never read a book. Who right. Have you known? I use that as an example. I've said to people, you get me worked up about the man again. I've said to people, if I've known anyone that's never read a book, they try to hide it. They don't brag about it. The president of the United States bragged that he never read a book.
Right. He's proud of it. And he was able to exploit people's ignorance. That's the thing. People like Trump because he was the guys I went to high school up here in New York, about an hour outside of the city, real kind of middle class, you know, people's dads were contractors and cops and firemen. And there was some sort of quiet kitchen table racism that went on, you know, and they weren't politically sophisticated people. You know, they're not people that read the Washington Post and the New York Times and paid attention in the morning shows on Sunday. But Trump came along and he made politics like WrestleMania, right? He waved a flag and he played a bunch of music and he demonized other people. And that they could get behind because he was like, you're special. The ignorant are my people. You know, he made it okay to be dumb because he replaced intelligence and empathy with these visceral emotions like anger and fear. And that motivates people. We saw what happened in Germany in the 30s when you do that to a people. And then he sort of melded it with Facebook and PSYOPs and all this kind of stuff. And that's where Jared comes in. So to answer your question, why am I qualified? I saw the machinations behind the scenes, right? I saw how Ivanka would get him to show up back on set when he'd storm off set because he soiled himself in a rage, which he literally did, okay? He can't read. So that's when he would snort the Adderall because he couldn't read big words on a cue card. It's why if you ever see him reading publicly, he's just following along with his finger, you know? And they spell it out phonetically. That's why he goes Minneapolis. If you hear him talking, he'll say Minneapolis. But if he has to read it, he says Minneapolis or industry because they write it out like Minneapolis.
No. Why did he never? This is fascinating stuff because now you're getting into what always fascinated me. And I think, Nestor, we talked about this during his presidency. Why did he? Again, I've worked with enough elected officials, having served in office myself.
He has great appreciation for Veep, if that matters.
It would have never dawned on me, even as a local county executive, admittedly of a big county, a county that's larger than four states, as you know, Baltimore County. But it would have never dawned on me to even go to a local American Legion with remarks without having read the remarks ahead of time, and edited them, made some changes, and read them again so that I was familiar with the speech as I got ready to give it. It was always clear to me that he was reading his remarks for the first time. Talk to me. What is it? You were on the inside. What is it about him that he didn't even for self-preservation think, you know, I ought to look at this first before I read it? Because clearly he was seeing it for the first time. What's that about?
He can't read. He doesn't have any intellectual curiosity. He's got no interest in governing. He wants to show up and he wants people to clap for him. Think of the 4th of July speech that he gave on the Mall. You know, when he's talking about planes and the Revolutionary War and stuff, you know? And the thing is, the people around him don't care enough. That's what people... You know, people, the thing people have to understand about Trump is that everyone hates him. Okay. His kids hate him. His wives hate him. His daughters hate him. They may pretend like they don't. The GOP hates him. Okay.
I guess Al Weisselberg, the only guy that doesn't hate him.
Yeah.
Not yet.
Weisselberg ain't going to flip. Calamari ain't going to flip. Those guys are mobsters. People don't get it. Trump was running a mob money laundering organization. That's what his dad did. His dad built for the Gambino crimes family. The front was FHA loans that were part of the New Deal. His dad literally built all his wealth building housing for GIs that were coming back from World War II. So he would get governmental loans that you didn't have to pay any interest on. He built all these buildings, and then he basically ran a tax fraud on them and laundered, you know, mob money through that, you know, for a bunch of 40 years, you know, until his son took over the business. Okay. So they don't care. The people around him are as in deep as he is. Okay. And so back to your point about reading, he doesn't read. He doesn't care. They basically push him out in front of an audience, and behind the scenes, they make the decisions. And this is my point. Like, why do I know? Because I saw it. I saw it on a smaller level at The Apprentice, and then I saw it when he was in the White House, because all you had to do was read between the lines and see that it was Jared that was going to UAE to cut a deal to bail himself out of 666 Fifth Avenue and get his financing taken care of, right? And they pulled in a strong arm deal on Qatar, right, to get Jared out of debt. The people around Trump, you know, look at Wilbur Ross. It just came out last week that Wilbur Ross made like $500 million while he served in the White House. You know, people were laughing at him like, oh, he's falling asleep. He was the Commerce Secretary, right? He was profiting off it. They're all profiting off it, you know, and they let him. He's the perfect beast in that he would get the crowds. You know, and then behind the scenes, the guys that really know what's going on were just filling their pockets, you know, and then you had the more nefarious types like Roger Stone and Paul Manafort. You know, there's a reason that everybody around Trump has criminal charges. You know, there wasn't one guy who was ethical in that whole situation. You know, Mike Pence would be the closest, and he didn't have a backbone. Right, Mike. They tried to hang Mike Pence, and he's like, "Yeah, whatever." You know, it was an honor serving Donald Trump.
Right? Can I run with you again in 4 years, Don? Right.
Exactly.
Noel Casler is here. He is, believe it or not, a comedian, but certainly a social commentator at this point. Don Mueller is also riding shotgun through all this thing. Noel will be playing down at Rams Head Annapolis, where sometimes there's rock and roll, sometimes there's comedy, and sometimes there's Cheap Trick. And for you with The Apprentice, and I guess the questions I wanted to ask following you for years, like the Vonky references sounds to me like what only he called her, and now you've sort of added, I don't know, the Vonky reference. But the other thing is, how much time did you spend soup to nuts to be qualified to be speaking in this way? I mean, were these 12-hour days 4 months a year for 3 years? Like, I don't understand how the thing was shot. A
couple of days, 12-hour days on the finales. You know, the finales would be 2-3 days once a year for 6 years. You didn't want any more time. I wasn't.
You didn't want to be a regular on the gig, and you didn't think, I'll kiss his ass. He'll be president one day,
exactly. Right?
Literally.
Well, look, what I saw was what you see. You know, as I said, ask the directors, you know, the people that are scared. They saw the really hardcore stuff. I just saw what you observe on a sound stage, you know. So that's a few N words. It's a lot of snorting Adderall. It's a lot of grabbing women. And you know, you hear all the stories from the crew, and you show up and say, hey, what's been going on? And the guys that have been there for the last 6 weeks.
Dude, Billy Bush went on a bus ride with him, and it cost him his career. Literally, he went on a bus ride with this maniac and came out of it without a career.
And I know Bill, and he was a nice guy, Billy. It's a perfect example. How you heard Trump talk was how he talks when you're one-on-one with him and there's not a camera. And he says stuff that guys don't say. Like, we're all guys, we talk about women. Oh, she looks hot or whatever. The way he phrases it is like a psycho. You're like, well, who does that? Nobody talks like that. He does.
It does give credibility to one of the incidents that you've talked about that really, really made me nauseous was his behavior at the beauty pageants, where it sounds like he's talking about cattle walking by. I think at one point you say you and you and you, and if you want to win, here's my suite number. I mean, am I remembering that right? Yep. In one of your interviews, it made me nauseous.
If you watch him run the country for 4 years, none of this even, you know, if you told me Barack Obama or Jimmy Carter did that, if you, you know, if you told me Mitt Romney did that, I would, or Kasich, you know, this is in character for what we saw for 4 years, right from the podium.
Exactly. I mean, and that's all I want people to take from it. You know, you don't have to believe me. As a matter of fact, I don't want you to believe me. I want you to judge for yourself. You know, I want you to find your own explanation of this behavior. Because there's no other way to, there's over 200 women who have said he assaulted them, okay? Where there's huge cases like E. Jean Carroll against him. This stuff was no secret in New York City. Matter of fact, the crew would tell women not to be alone with him, okay? And they had to sleep in a tower, in an apartment in Trump Tower, right? And he would have cameras in the apartment. Like, the guy is a serious psychopath, literally. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. He's basically a mob boss with some really, you know, he hung out with Epstein. Like, it's all there for you to research and see. He's not some hero savior for the middle class of America. He's a con man. He's still bilking people out of their money now. He's not going to be president again, but he's sending his followers text every day saying, donate to the Trump reelection fund. I really am the president and I'm going to take office again in August. No, he's not. And he knows it. He's 75.
One thing about the con, it never ends, does it?
No, well, really, I mean, think about it, Nestor. No, I love what you said. Just look, it's one of the things that never made sense. And I've had this discussion with friends and relatives. We watched him make fun of a reporter with Parkinson's disease. I think it was Parkinson's disease. Yeah.
And I watched him throw toilet paper at the Puerto Rican people after a flood.
Throwing toilet paper at the Puerto Ricans. We've watched him tell police officers to beat people up as they're putting them in the prison. I would say to folks, we watched him say, can we put bleach, can we ingest bleach to fight the virus? As I would say to my friends, don't believe me. Don't believe Noel. Don't believe Rachel Maddow. Just watch and ask yourself if that's okay. That's been the puzzlement of the past 5 years. It's been the puzzlement.
Look, we're you know, you guys are in Maryland. I live down there. When I lived in D.C., I worked on Capitol Hill for the Congressional Budget Office. I was a bike messenger, and I would ride House documents down to lobbyists on K Street. You know, when I was 18, 19, I was taking night classes at the University of Maryland. On January 6th, when that Capitol got attacked, it felt like a personal affront. You know, it felt like a violation, like somebody was coming into my house and destroying it. It disgusted me on a cellular, molecular level, right? What did Trump do that afternoon? You know, at 6 o'clock, when they finally made him make a statement, he came out and said, you're wonderful people, we love you, but go home now. Right? That says it all right there. He said, we love you, to people that like attacked police officers, that desecrated the temple of our democracy. And his response was, we love you, because he saw that they had his name written on their t-shirts. Again, all he cares about is him. And he basically almost did destroy this country. You know, people don't understand. If he had gotten reelected in November, it's all over. Your show isn't on there with me talking about it at this point. Somebody's coming in through my back door and dragging me away. He would go full on Putin. Just like Putin just pulled somebody off an airplane and is torching him, Trump would love to do that, okay? He's a very sadistic, violent man deep down.
Does he believe, Noel, and you've been very gracious with your time, does he believe in anything other than his own aggrandizement? Is there anything that is core to his beliefs? I've been unable to find it. You were there. Does he believe in anything?
No. And when I worked for him, he was a Democrat. Okay. He only switched to the Republican Party in 2008 when Barack Obama got elected, you know, because he was an African-American man. And that was just, Trump was, grew up racist. His dad was in the KKK. He's old school New York. You guys mentioned Puerto Ricans. He hated Puerto Ricans the most. He used the S word to describe them on The Apprentice. So when I saw him throwing paper towels, I'm like, oh, they're not going to get a dime from his administration. This is revenge for him because he's old school 50s, 60s New York. If you know anything, you know,
watch West Side Story.
I was just going to say, it was like he was in the Jets or something, dude. He was like, you know, that's who he is. He's an old school New York racist, you know, who came to power in a time when racism went mainstream. There's really no better way to describe what we're living through. You know, we're going backwards as a nation and we can't. We got to correct it. And I'll shut up now. But like you said, Nestor, when you talked about those people picking the blueberries up in Maine, that's not unskilled labor. It's very difficult to fill a quart of those every 10 minutes to get paid. There's no machine that can do that. So the people that are putting that food on your table are skilled workers. They're vital to our economy and our health as a nation. We need to report, we need to take care of them and reward them, not marginalize them. They're part of us. Welcome.
Well, Nestor, you said this was going to be world-class Hall of Fame. I give you an A-plus as executive producer. You know, you got it done.
I don't book any of the guests. You're the only guest I've booked this year, and look how it turned out. No, Kasser will be at the Rams at Annapolis. He'll be funnier than he's been the last 45 minutes, I hope. I hope you're not a stranger. And it's interesting you would say about skilled laborers and blueberries, because, Noel, I'm doing this Maryland crab cake tour, and I know of your love for the state, and I would never go to Silver Spring or Peachy County for a crab cake, but I'm going to, because I'm from Baltimore. We don't drive to D.C. to get crab cakes when you're from Dundalk, you know. But I'm doing the whole state, and we're having all sorts of people on, you know, people that are running for governor, Michael Steele, Tom Perez today, John King, Doug Gansel, lots of people, but other celebrities, different people. And one of the reasons we're doing this is one of our sponsors, and this is Costas over in Dundalk. Fadley's is one of our other great sponsors down at Lexington Market, world famous crab cakes. Last year, they brought to our attention over on the Eastern Shore that my people, Venezuelans, and they're all Venezuelan because Venezuelans have the blue crab in the Lake Maracaibo, where my father's from, Maracaibo, Venezuela, and they know how to pick the crabs, and it's a skill, and it's something that at University of Maryland, they tried to get robotics. Robotics can't pick a crab because they're all too different, and they're never going to be able to do that. It's always going to be a human issue to hunt crabs, harvest crabs, and then pick crabs, which is where your crab cake comes from. So it's delicious, it tastes great, but it really comes from a crab that was picked with human hands. Whether it came from Indonesia, or whether it's coming from Venezuela, or whether it's coming from Smith Island or Solomon's. So I'm doing this tour because Trump locked out the Venezuelans. We've had no crabs in this state, no crab cakes, because crab prices are $50 a pound because they have nobody to pick the crabs. Then the crabbers don't want to go out and pick the crab, pull the crabs out of the water. And what they usually wind up in the factory are the females, damaged crabs. The big old males, they wind up at Costas or Fadley's at $200 a dozen. The other ones wind up in your crab cake. And this is a real problem. So the month of all, can you imagine not having crabs in Maryland? I mean, it's crazy in the month of August. So we're talking about immigration and where it comes from and where these crabs come from while we, of course, eat crab cakes and drink beer. So that's first idea. It's kind of like the comedy comes after the Trump thing. But I really appreciate the time and the intellect that you bring to this. And I'll keep following you out on Twitter, encourage everyone else to follow you. And I hope you sell out two nights at Ramshead because it's small. How about that?
Thank you, Nestor. Thank you, Don. I appreciate being here, and I look forward to coming back again if you'll have me, dude. And everybody come out to the Ram's Head. I promise. It's funnier. You know, we talk about love. Like you just said with those crabs, when people do a job really well, they take pride in it. You know, when you learn to do something well as a human, it's love. You're giving your life to that. You want love in your crabs and your back fin. You know, you don't want a factory doing it. You want human, you know, connection in your food.
Well, I'll tell you what, it is September 16th is your gig. It's a Thursday night. From my lips to God's ears, the Ravens will be 1-0 and beat the Raiders on Monday night. And the crab cakes will be delicious in Annapolis that night. Appreciate you, Noel. Thanks for making some time for us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
You got it, gentlemen. Thank you.
September 16th, go see him down at Annapolis Ramshead. Go follow him out on Twitter. He is Noel Kassler. That's C-A-S-L-E-R. Don had never heard of him yesterday. I have a feeling Don's whole family will know about it by next week.
He's in my Twitter feed now, I promise you.
You can find us usually at the Barstool, Fadley's, having some oysters or some crab cakes. You can certainly ship out. You can pick up some rockfish like I did a couple of weeks ago. Squeeze some lemon and some caper on there. It's delicious. We're getting out on the crab cake tour. We will have Mayor Brandon Scott next month at Coco's. Johnny O is going to be joining us over at the aforementioned Costas. We have, yes, a Republican. It's true. He runs Harford County. He's not a bad guy. Barry Glassman will join us up at Barrett's in Harford County to kick things off next week. And we're also going to be joined by Anne Arundel County Executive Stuart Pittman, hopefully down at G&M. Please call us back. Thank you. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. On behalf of former Baltimore County Executive Don, I am Nestor, and we are BaltimorePositive.com.